Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 98 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is the year 2024, and we are ever so approaching the end of the year with a little bit of fall color here in Louisiana and slightly cooler temperatures. But I know there are other regions of the United States that are starting to really feel it now. As I've talked to some other bonsai professionals and other bonsai practitioners, that they are prepping their overwintering and greenhouses for the upcoming season. So just as a little thing to put out there, like we mention in the show all the time, we're always trying to stay on top of current seasonal change and current techniques you can be applying to your trees. For now, it'll just be me on this episode, and I was going to go over a few things with you guys and just talk about some stuff that I'm working on, something I'm also excited about. And also in this episode, we are going to have a review. So me and Oscar Jonker did a review of his most recent online course that he released this past month. And it was really exciting. He gave me early access to it, and I was able to go through and watch it and go ahead and pick through and pick apart his course and give an honest consumer review on it, I guess, as far as a bonsai customer of his. And there's also some really exciting things coming from Bonsai Empire as pertaining to our sponsorship, our Little Things for Bonsai People sponsorship as well. That will be discussed in the next episode, on episode 99. I don't want to spoil anything, but we recorded both these episodes in tandem, basically. So I kind of know the future, but I don't want to spoil too much. But yeah, before I get into that, and also we run the review with me and Oscar, I do want to mention that our show is sponsored by our patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a best bud and hang out in the Discord with these amazing people. We have so many patrons that we say all of the shout outs at the end of the episode. I do always bring up the new Bonsai best buds, and this week we have quite a few. Draco, Michael Rouse, Joseph Gardano, and Kathy Barbazon. Thank you guys so much for subscribing. And our featured Bonsai bud for this week is going to be... usually when I go through this, I have a problem highlighting who was the previous featured best bud, but we're going to go ahead and make it David Smith this week. Thank you, David Smith, so much for subscribing at the $5 level. You are awesome. Thank you for supporting the Little Things and helping us further education for Little Things to be an educational platform for people to learn bonsai from basics to more advanced. And then, of course, we have our specimen best buds, Unra Yuin, Australia, and then Bill Butler with Bill's Bayou, and then our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, John, so much for sponsoring our show. And, of course, we don't mention it enough, but thank you, Bonsai Bar, for being a supporter from almost the beginning of our transition over to Little Things from previously what the show was called, Bonsai Southeast. And also, I can't go much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes us sound smart. He cleans up all the audio and makes us enjoyable to listen to. You can go over to mattodonnell.com and you can fill out I keep saying contact form and you take it on my notes, but you can go over there and contact him through his website. He has an email, Instagram, Facebook, under the same name, Matt O'Donnell. So O'Donnell. And you can go look him up there. He will do a podcast show with you or an audio engineering project with you. He's a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee. And he's an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script to say it every single time. Like I was saying before, there's a couple other things about the scholarship. And I know that we have new Bonsai Best Buds. That is one of the requirements to be awarded the scholarship, is to also be a Bonsai Best Bud at the time of the process of us going through and awarding the person who will get the $200 from Little Things and the other things that will be discussed a little bit later on in episode 99. And just so you guys know real quick, we do have a date on that cutoff. It has been decided that that December 1st will be our cutoff date for basically Bonsai Stories. You can go over and you can email me at evan@underhillbonsai.com and All we need is a bonsai story. Tell us what your intentions are in bonsai, what you plan to do with the educational fund after you receive it. And then, of course, we will hook you up with everything that we can to get you in the doors to learn bonsai hands-on. Tell us how that will progress your knowledge and what you plan on doing in the future. And it doesn't have to be the next bonsai professional of the ages. You don't have to be anybody that's going to turn a page or be a pioneer. If it's as simple as you want to do bonsai for yourself in your own backyard and you want to be able to do it at a higher level, we will also accept that as well. So don't feel like there is a barrier there to that. So like I mentioned before we get to the review, I did want to go over something I have been working on recently, and I really want to emphasize how important it is to me, and I think also to one of the ground laying, like one of the building blocks of what I built the show off of originally was when we were back called, we were called Bonsai Southeast. I wanted to specify the Southeast United States and the culture and also the species that we use in this part of the country to contribute to the bonsai world. And luckily, with a lot of the outreach and the attention that we've been able to gain through just aggressively putting out episodes for you guys about various topics, having various other professionals and guests on as well, I've been able to squeeze in some bonsai Louisiana and Southeast history with Guy Guidry, with Randy Bennett, with Bill Butler, and of course with Nate Murray being the next generation of collecting bald cypresses, and we're going to keep going forward, and we've got a lot of really exciting things happening here. And I just wanted to tell you guys about a article series that I'm starting to really get into on underhillbonsai.com. And I know that a lot of people will redirect their attention to underhillbonsaistore.com. And I know that's great. It drives the business. It keeps the lights on. And it keeps me behind the mic so I can keep learning and developing and sharpening my own bonsai skills. And so first and foremost, if you've purchased any trees from Underhill, I know that our Japanese maples and our bald cypresses are especially popular at the moment. Thank you guys so much for purchasing those trees and doing business with us. It really, really helps out. But as far as what I do bonsai for, like I mentioned on an earlier episode where I guess my own intention episode where I just stepped out and just told everybody my own story, is that I wanted to first and foremost feature my favorite species for bonsai, which are going to be my natives, because I am a homegrown Southeast boy, if you can say that. So yeah, we've talked about bald cypress plenty of times, but I think I really, really want to bring to the forefront species that I've been working a lot with, which is water elm, which is the Planar aquatica species. Find them to be extremely fascinating in the things that I've been able to achieve in a short period of time with them, with my time at the nursery here, especially at a production level in as far as producing them from propagation, which would be cuttings mostly. And then every once in a while, you'll see stuff about people collecting them. And one of their most famous collecting spots in Southeast Louisiana would be Lake Catahoula, which, as rumor has it, that collection spot is not as rich as it formerly was. It still is available, but it's become more and more challenging to get in there and collect good water elms. So if you guys go over and refer to my my blog posting site on underhillbonsai.com, I have some really exciting stuff coming up, whereas I actually was able to sit down with Randy Bennett, and he, formerly being a student of the late Von Banting, he actually provided with me with some really awesome and very insightful views into the past of what Von Banting was capable of as far as a bonsai artist and bonsai pioneer. Not only did he pioneer flat top bald cypresses and created the, I guess you can call more of like the exotic feel for bald cypress, he also brought into the spotlight a few other species down here that we're kind of overlooking, in my opinion. And I know there's a couple of them out there and they're really great examples, but just to list off a few of the exciting species we have, other than water elm that I'm talking about here, would be stuff like American hornbeams, just a great species. I know that one's on a lot of people's radars, but it's a difficult species to collect and propagate. Also, of course, we have the sweet gum. I know there's a couple of different varieties of sweet gum. We have the southern sweet gum that grows here. It's going to be the liquid amber sorry, I'm always awesome with pronouncing these things. So we have the sweet gum, liquid amber, stricifolia. Not 100% on that pronunciation. Like I said, it's some Latin there. And we also have a couple of other species like the Acer rubrum, which we have the Drummond's Acer rubrum. That is specified to the variant that has kind of mutated and evolved into what we call the swamp maple here. There's not any major differences between that and its more northern cousin, which is just strictly just the Acer rubrum. I've seen Acer rubrums in Colorado. I've seen them in the Carolinas. I've seen them up into New York State. And so I've seen Acer rubrums, you know, it's one of the most common deciduous trees in the world, especially the most common deciduous tree in North America by a long shot, because it takes up our entire eastern coast and even stretches out almost into the Rockies and stuff. It's a pretty interesting little tree itself. And these were trees that Von Banting used, and actually he got his bald cypress, his famous flat top, a sweet gum, and also an Acer rubrum into the national collection. But little is known about the Planar aquatica that he also got into the national collection. I'm still doing research, so this is an ongoing project. So if you're hearing this and you know information about water elms, especially the one that was in the national collection, if it's still there, I will be at the national collection in May of next year. I'll be visiting for a reason that I will be kind of just keeping to myself for the moment, but I will be there. And so the water elm at the national collection, I haven't seen any recent pictures. If anyone has any information on that, that would be awesome to find out. And if it's unfortunate news, then that's what it is. It's just a part of the history of this species. I also know that there's a couple of water elms that have been displayed in major shows. So if you are an owner of a water elm, please, please contact me through my email that I stated earlier, the same email. And if you have images of beautiful water elm in development or bonsai of your own, or maybe you own a Von Banting water elm, because I heard a handful of his trees they made their way out into the greater scene of bonsai. And I would love to see where those trees are now, because some of those trees will come from the 70s and from the 80s, from whenever he collected those from Lake Catahoula. And so we really, really want to get a good tracking on this. But yeah, the reason why I'm getting into this with this species is that I think that they are really underutilized in bonsai as far as how flexible they are, how strong they are. And I was going to go through and kind of give a synopsis of one of the articles that I wrote, and Randy's also contributed articles to the blog posting as well to kind of give his take on it, because Randy was there back collecting with Vaughn when that was happening, and that's really awesome, and we have old images from that. But I don't want to go in and completely air the entire article out, because I feel like I could go on for a couple of hours about this, but I feel like they're underutilized. They're a very strong species for bonsai. And I would say they are the elm species to the bald cypress. I know I talked a lot about winged elms in the past and my excitement over Yuma salata. And I still think Yuma salata is an outstanding species for bonsai. And I particularly think it's interesting that a tree that is seen as a trash tree could be such fine bonsai. And I know just recently, Robert Pressler put a winged elm into the Pacific Bonsai Expo. I don't know if anybody noticed that. You know, I don't know if anyone has ever seen the beautiful winged elm that was showed at the national show by Rodney Clemens and now resides in the Pacific Bonsai Museum in Tacoma, Washington. So there's a lot of really great winged elm examples out there that have especially gone to higher levels and are great examples of that species. But I know that there are more water elms out there, and I've found old articles in old Bonsai Today, Bonsai International magazines, and I just wanted to emphasize on how it feels like they were becoming so important, but then kind of just fell off and are kind of fallen to history. But I know here at Underhill that we've propagated so many, and don't think that this is to push the stock we have, but it's to encourage people to work with yet another amazing North American species, especially in the deciduous department, because I feel like we're lacking a little bit in the deciduous department here for such a tree that the water elm has such a small leaf and tight internodes. And I mean, I used to get excited about working on Yuma's parfifolia on the Chinese elm, and then found out that these trees are infinitely better. The only key difference between water elm and the Chinese elm that people could probably pick apart is the fact that the bark is very smooth as compared to what Chinese elms could do as far as corkiness or bark textures. But really, I could care less, because the water elm still gives us a exfoliating bark, very similar to like what a crepe myrtle or a Brazilian rain tree will do. Of course, that happens with age, so you have to be a little bit more patient, but that is what we do bonsai for. I would encourage you guys to go over to underhillbonsai.com and keep up with some of the articles that I'm going through there and producing, because I don't want to go in and keep telling you guys to go check out more content. You guys are here for this content. I don't know if some people are about reading articles or redirecting their attention, but if you want, I know I've gotten a lot of questions about them since they've been pushed into the limelight a little bit more, especially with me going around and teaching workshops. As of recently, I've gotten a lot of emails about, you know, care guides and where to find more information on them. And I really want to fill that hole for you guys as far as the care and development of water elm, the Planner Aquatica online as a good resource there. So if you guys have, like I said, if you have any more questions, or if you have any information you could provide of old bonsai that are water elms or anything along those lines, please send me an email. I would love to include them in my articles and feature other authors in this article series, like Randy Bennett has been providing already. So this is a team effort to revive and restore some of the information online that was lost. And what I mean by being lost is that even with Vaughn Banting's work and images and things that he's done, there's not even like a strong resource for Vaughn's history. So with permission, I have gained access to a lot of those photos of his early works, and I will be able to share stuff pertaining to my topic here. And every once in a while, I'll be able to throw in something, special that, you know, either Randy or Guy, because, Guy has expressed a lot of interest in doing this project as well. And so Guy Guidry will also give his two cents and his insights into, Vaughn's life, and also remembering, a great master and pioneer of bonsai in the Southeast here. And I hope to just keep on continuing that research and doing the due diligence and the work with these trees that he'd done before me. And that is kind of the statement overhaul. You'll see that at the end of the article that I posted just recently. And I think there, by this time this episode drops, there'll probably be two or three articles, to be honest, but just go look for them. Without further ado, if you are here for the consumer review of the Bonsai Empire course Suzuki Masterclass under their online courses, then I present to you me and Oscar Jonker discussing that class in detail and giving basically a critique. So you guys enjoy.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
How's it going, bonsai buds? This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and today we are in episode 98 of Little Things for Bonsai People. We're doing a little quick segment here to talk with Oscar Jonker of Bonsai Empire, or should I just say you're the curator, creator, and mastermind behind it, right? How's it going today?
Yeah, doing well. Did you say 98?
Yep. Episode 98 right now.
Oh, you guys have been busy. Yeah, no, doing well. Before we started, we were chatting about the Pacific Bonsai Expo. I missed out on something really big over there. But other than that, I'm doing well.
Yeah. We were chatting about the Pacific Bonsai Expo put on by Jonas Dupuis, Andrew Robson, and Eric, I can't remember your last name at the moment. That's how things go sometimes. There's so
Schrader,
many names.
Right?
There you go. I did meet him one time. I was in Portland over in Michael's Garden. And I've met Andrew a handful of times and talked to Jonas a good deal of times. I've seen him in Nationals several times. Awesome guys. But yeah, like we were saying earlier, don't worry. It'll come back around. We got another 2 years to prep for a show like that. So got plenty of time. We were kind of going through. We're talking about your newest course that you released on Bonsai Empire, Bonsai Garden Course, the official name of it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Suzuki Masterclass, we named it.
Yeah. I got a little bit of a sneak preview before, and then, of course, we had to push back with time restraints here. But I did get to watch it earlier on, and I had some notes for you about the course as a whole. And then some questions about production stuff and how it was done and some little insider knowledge about how these things happen, if you don't mind.
Yeah, got it. Now I'm curious to hear your thoughts, of course.
Yeah. Well, just a broad scope, like a summary of the entire course is that you've obviously come a long way from your earlier courses. Because I've been keeping up with your courses. How long you've been doing these for? It's got to be at least almost a decade.
Yeah, I think nearly. The first course we ever made was done together with Bjorn Bjørholm.
Yeah,
still shot in Japan, so he was still in the garden in Japan. So that might have been a decade ago. I'm not even sure.
It feels like it. Yeah,
yeah.
Because I remember we talked, and I was familiar with your site easily a decade ago, and then I remember the courses launched. I mean, not too long after you had that going on. You've come a long, long way with like production, with the way that your shots look on the camera. Even the way that the panning and the stability and all that in the shots are beautiful. So,
right.
I mean, it almost
has
like
credit for all that though, but
it has a cinematic kind of feel to it. I really have to give you a lot of credit. So there wasn't a lot of things that I could find negative about it, you know, as far as criticizing the work and going through and, you know, from a consumer standpoint of looking at your course. I've got a handful of notes here, but the quality, the high definition quality of this is, I mean, it looks great either on your phone, on your computer, and you can scale it up to your to a TV, which I'm very happy to see that this course was castable. But there was a few limitations on what it could be cast to, depending on, you know, because mostly it's Apple.
Yeah.
And the argument is everybody has an Apple, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a video player service that, yeah, indeed, you can't do everything. Like I use Chrome myself, so my browser, Google Chrome, and then I can cast it also to my TV. So I think it's possible, but it's not always as easy as it should be.
Yeah. And that's just, see, like I said, I got minor gripes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pick you apart.
We'll make it better.
No, I'm not going to pick you apart like me and Carmen do with our Bonsai critiques sometimes when we feel like we've gone too far. But no, this is totally excusable. Like, I love casting these types of things to my TV because, I mean, everybody's got a larger TV nowadays. We're past the stage of tube TVs, so high definition is king.
If you want to cast any course, I think this will be the one. It's slower than some of the other courses we did, so this is something I can imagine you want to sit on the couch and just take your time and go through all the...
I was going to mention that. Yes, this is a very, like, you got a slow weekend and you need to veg out on the couch and just sip on coffee. I mean, this is some like excuse my terminology, but this is some bonsai porn, feel like, yeah. You know, like, I was going to pick on you about the music a little bit, because some of the music's got that funky, good bass kind of like in it. And if you just turn it on subtly, it gets you in that vibe of just like I'm here to just look at the pan shots of like going through the gardens nice and slow. One of the things I really do enjoy about videos that take their time like this is, you know, we sit here and we talk to the masters, Shinji Suzuki and Luis Vallejo, for a good period of time, but we also get plenty wide shots, and you take your time sweeping across these beautiful bonsai displays.
Yeah.
And I have to give you credit for that, because there's some people, even with like, just to kind of bring up something about like the Pacific Bonsai Expo, where people were shooting videos of those trees, and I'm like, okay, take your time. I want to see the chop. I want to see the healed wounds. I want to see the branch placement. You took your time. So I really appreciate that. But yeah, as far as the quality, you're able to blow it up big. It doesn't get blurry. Nothing goes out of control. So what is your definition set to? You got 4K on this.
Yeah.
As an option, which is amazing. You know, everybody should be in 4K.
Yeah, everything is filmed 4K, and that also helps. Sometimes you want to go close up even a little bit more. So with 4K filming, you can also just get real zoom shots if you didn't make them on the spot. It's ideal. It's ridiculous how many hard disks we need to make these courses.
I can imagine
20 or 30 of them lying around here, but.
And I can imagine. Do you just a quick little like background question? Not like a back, but like a behind the scenes question is like, when you guys shoot this much footage at this quality, what is it like? Do you guys cloud this to your team, and it takes hours to upload, or do you save it all in like thumb drives and hard disks? How's it work?
Yeah, this is terabytes of data, so it's not in the cloud. Although it could do that, but my team, we're together here, so it's better to work from hard disks. It's a few terabytes of filming. We usually with these courses we film a few days, so you end up with a course that's condensed down to what, 4 or 5 hours filming in Suzuki's garden, and Vallejo was a few days. So for me it's nice hearing that you still get that calm feeling going through the lectures, but I sometimes feel like, did I take too much out, or did I not take enough out? Because there is a sweet spot where you don't want to fall asleep, because it is an online course. You want it has to be educational. You can't just dream away and only watch bonsai porn. So we always try and find a balance where there's enough education in it, but with this course we took it a little bit more slow.
Yeah,
it's a different vibe.
You're familiar with Space Odyssey, the movie?
Yeah,
where the shots go so long, and you're in that point, which you're talking about, you get that long shot where he's floating out from the space station.
Yeah, it takes forever.
It takes so long, and then you get to that point where your anticipation and your aggravation starts to peak. But then you have to remind yourself, like, they're in freaking space, man. What do you expect? But like for the bonsai garden, that's kind of another thing. Is like, you have to be warped into that environment, and those long shots and that time that you take is important. That was actually one of my side questions beyond the production of this that I thought was an interesting thing to kind of go into, is how does it really feel to be in those garden spaces, and then take that, what is the challenge of taking that vibe, that mood, and translating it to film?
Yeah, that is a challenge. Well, these gardens I've visited several times. I think also before you get a big famous Japanese master to agree to do an online course, they need to know you and trust you. So it's not like you take the phone and ask him, like, hey, you want to do an online course? And he's like, oh yeah, let's do it. So it takes a few times. So I've been in these gardens and I filmed there before as well. But to filming the gardens for a YouTube video is something different from filming their gardens while doing interviews, while trying to make this an educational course about how they designed these gardens. So that takes some preparation, both from our end, so from Bonsai Empire, but mostly from the teacher. So actually Shinji Suzuki and us were in touch for a while before we flew over to Japan to film it. And he had a lot of things prepared not everything we could use in the end result with the online course, but a lot of drawings, a lot of sketches he made before he designed his online garden. So he wanted to show all those things, and those parts are actually in the course, where he went from his design to the finished product, which is, I think, the most beautiful bonsai garden in the world. Together with his other design garden in Kyoto, which I think opened a few years ago. There's nothing in terms of garden design and using the Japanese aesthetic to really create a calm space to display bonsai that is, I think, unrivaled.
Yeah, I agree. And you captured those shots to show that, how you feel in those spaces. And like you said, you got to be there, and like, you don't go one time and look in a few spaces. I'm sure you had to explore every single nook and cranny of these gardens.
Yeah, and use the drone to get air footage as well, because we're talking about sections in his garden. So you need shots to be able to show that as well. Actually, Shinji Suzuki himself would also ask us, like, hey, can we talk about this? And then we would also take our time to film detailed shots of whatever we were discussing, water fountains or displays of trees, and etc. And same actually with Luis Vallejo. So he's based in Madrid, so that's a little bit closer for me. Also a garden I've visited quite a few times, because in my opinion, outside of Japan, this is the best bonsai collection there is, but also in the best bonsai display there is, because he's a landscape designer and a pretty well-known one as well. Usually he designs palace gardens and really, really beautiful landscapes. And so he designed his own bonsai museum, of course, which is something else as well. And I think the same level of preparation was made by Luis Vallejo. It was actually filmed half a year later. Also to add something extra to the course, where, you know, having a landscape designer talk about garden design and also translating Japanese aesthetics into what we have in Europe or the US. I think that was an important part that was missing talking with Shinji Suzuki. So Luis Vallejo added using local materials or translating Japanese concepts into things that we like here. So these two combined, I think, were, they made a good team without really knowing it before.
Just going back on a few of your statements there, like, whenever great bonsai trees are clean and they're presentable and they're healthy, and then you put them into a space like this, it really elevates it. And I can see that. And I agree that I'd seen a couple of Luis Vallejo's shots on like other videos. And I believe you had done a video before in the past where you've kind of gone through and you walked the garden path kind of style. And that's really cool. And it does flow beautifully. Like the stepping stone areas that cut through little garden raised areas that go to the standing water stones to the bonsai are just meticulously placed. Yeah. It almost feels like the bonsai trees were designed to be made for that garden, but he encapsulated that perfectly. So yeah, I agree. It's, you know, outside of Japan, it's very difficult to capture that feeling of a true garden space like this.
One of my incredible how much planning and consideration goes into designing.
Sure, it takes years to put this together too, because things have to grow. If you plant landscaping, it's not going to look like this unless you build it around a centerpiece. And quick note, it blew my mind to hear how much Mr. Suzuki spent on that rock. It's in his garden. I like that detail y'all put in there. I was like, holy crap. Like that was a big deal for him.
Yeah.
And that hard structure of that garden, like the stone structure, is extremely important. And that's one of the things you can learn from this course, of course, is that all the details, the softscape and the hardscapes, that particular piece of landscape in his garden makes an impact. And it's framed beautifully by those dragon style bonsai trees. And I just like, man, that's incredible. Yeah. And it inspires you to be like, how much do I need to pay to get a rock in my ear?
Wouldn't be great, right? To get that stone in your garden.
Yep.
I think an important part with this online course was also to translate that, you know, end game, the highest level of garden design, and but also translate it to the, you know, common people like myself. Like, I don't have that budget for one stone, so we did try to, you know, talk about how to do this yourself at home. What materials would you use there, and if you what happens if you use local materials? What do you need to look for? So it's we made that, we try at least to make that translation from the inspirational piece to, you know, practical DIY stuff for if you're designing a garden yourself that is mm-hmm. not that big and with a totally different budget.
Yeah. And that might be one of the minor criticisms I had too, is like, you see this high level garden and the viewer's like, how do I do that?
But
you know, giving them all the pieces, of course, that does kind of, you know, that does inspire, you know, for us to dream it up. And, you know, cause for instance, like right now, my bonsai garden in my backyard is, you know, graveled. It's got tables, it's got monkey pole stands or the display stands in there, and I'm happy. But if I could go to the next level, if I had the budget, of course. And me and my wife will go back and forth. Well, I would like this over here and this over here. And you know how it's like, well, we can never see eye to eye. And I was like, I would love to have a wall that blocks off and tells you that the garden is private. Like, you know, you have to come in from this area. She's like, no, that's, you know, so those types of things have to be considered as well. But yeah, I like that there's a quality of realism here, but yet we do have to consider people have different budgets, like you said.
Definitely.
That might be a little, you know, but yeah, let me kind of go through some more of my notes on just kind of critiquing it as well. Like we mentioned earlier, we always get a little sidetracked talking, but that's a good thing though. The conversation flow is great. So some of the shots with Shinji, Mr. Suzuki, I should say, respectfully, is that they're quite long and they're a little static at points. The subtitles do help a lot, and your subtitles are very precise. So that's a good edit. Some people, it's kind of like when people watch anime, they're like, I'm a sub or dub guy. And I know it would have been goofy to get like a dub over his voice. Sometimes like reading that could go a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if there is a way to break it up.
Yeah, but, no, I got that.
You know.
I considered doing a dub, but I was like, nah, I can't dub these two superheroes in bonsai. Like you need to hear their voices. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's true. You do need to like combine reading and watching. It's maybe I'm a little bit more used to it because I'm Dutch. So in Holland, we have a lot of English stuff. When I was a kid playing computer games, it was always English. So I've always had to read subtitles. So for me, it's every day. Like, well, maybe for you, it's a little bit. Don't have to.
I know. I'm an American. I have one language.
Yeah. You guys are lucky.
Yeah. We're not very, unfortunately, we're not the most bilingual country, but, you know, but yeah,
do
when
you
it comes
Spanish, by the way, or
what was that?
Do you speak Spanish or?
Very lightly. I mean, we have Spanish people, Hispanic people that, you know, we interact with on a regular basis. And so we know phrases and stuff. Well, I do. There's some people who are much better than I am, but, it's, you know, it kind of going to the subtitle thing, like, it's kind of like a thing where, like I said, if it's subbed and you're, I'm just going to reference the anime thing again. There's some people who are hardcore anime fans, and I've had friends make fun of me for listening to a dub, but sometimes when my brain really wants to shut off and the words are just fed to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But like I said, minor gripe on that. But I mean, like you said, you can't take that element away from Mr. Suzuki because he's a master. He's a legend.
And he's got a beautiful voice too.
Yeah. He's very... And that was one of the things I was going to bring up, but there's some moments. So it's just like this whole thing where when you look at someone's face and you can see their mouth moving, the language comes through much clearer. There are moments because of how softly he speaks, the shots whenever you're faced away and you're kind of doing a B-roll, he is so soft that he kind of fades under the other sounds, or you're just kind of like listening a little closer.
Right.
So there was just a few moments on audio. But yeah. I'm sure it's challenging with somebody, like you said, with a soft voice. You don't want to blow him out and make him sound weird.
Yeah.
Like I said, minor gripe.
He is soft spoken, very, my Japanese is absolutely horrible, but I know that he's a very delicate speaker, so more poetic, I think. Different from maybe some of the other famous masters that are more direct and more, perhaps a bit more, well, harsh is a harsh word, but well, you know what I mean. But he's a poetic speaker almost, so it's beautiful to listen to him, even not knowing Japanese very well.
Mm-hmm.
I had interpreter there, of course, to be able to ask questions and to get the interview going.
Yeah.
But
like you said, listening to his speaking voice, he has a flow, a very formal style of his flow in Japanese. Yeah. It's very nice. So like you said, you could probably even turn off the subtitles, turn your brain off even more, and just kind of get a generalized idea of what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Because the examples that he uses for his display course section, or, you know, just going through and explaining the importance of placement in design, just seeing him move those elements around goes a long way. And so, that's a really good takeaway from this course, in that is that, yeah, you give plenty of examples. And so let me kind of go into how you have this sectioned up, because Bonsai Empire courses have been like this for a long time. And so your layout is very like, it's kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with this, like when you go to like start a new job and then they have like the instructional videos you're supposed to watch before you get through your grace period or whatever. So it kind of has that layout where it's like a welcome video. No, welcome videos, I'm going to be honest, it makes me smile because the guy's deep voice, he's like, hello, welcome to the Bonsai Empire. And I'm like, this guy, he's like setting it up. And I was going to ask you real quick, as like a behind the scenes, who is that person speaking? Because I know it's not you.
No. I wish I had that voice. No, I love it. He's a guy from the UK, so he helps me. I think he did most of the course. I think I picked him out once, discussed with Bjorn, and Bjorn and I were like, yeah, this is the one to do our trailer. we always kept working with him.
It's like that David Attenborough kind of like, you hear the voice, you're like, oh, I know that voice. I've heard that since I was a child.
Yeah, we need to do a documentary and have him. Yeah.
Very good documentary voice. But yeah, the way the sections are kind of portioned up, it does make it digestible. And in the world of like quick, like where we got reels, Instagram reels and TikTok and all that stuff, the attention span of people is going to be only so much given periods of time that they got to sit down or scan or, you know, doom scrolls, what they call it nowadays.
Yeah.
So like if you've got certain video lengths, I think where you're at with these video lengths is comfortable. I think the typical length of videos is about like 30 minutes is kind of like where you're kind of getting there, and you can hold someone's attention for long enough. One video, I know you needed a lot of details in this, but the one that's 40 minutes with him talking about the case study.
Yeah, that's a long one. Yeah.
That one feels like a job interview at some points, but you break it up with shots of like, you said, the bird's eye view, he's sketching and drawing and kind of sectioning it up. So it is a very good detail course, but I think maybe it could have been broken up into another section even, if that was possible.
Yeah.
But like you said, he wanted to talk about a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
so it's
true.
Hard to...
Oh, yeah. Perhaps that one was too long. That's I think that's the case study, right? Where he really sits down and detailed draws the a design for a new garden. That's fascinating. It's actually my own garden. So for me, it's... maybe it's most interesting. I had to use an example, so I was like, okay, well, let's take my my garden. I recently moved and needed my inspiration as well. I'm actually doing the work now together with a landscaper.
Awesome, man!
Based on the design that Louis Vallejo made.
So this kind of worked out both ways for you. You're like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I needed a. How you say, like an example that I could use and abuse for this. So the gardens that Louis Vallejo, but also Shinji Suzuki is not a landscape designer, of course. So the most practical stuff was done with Louis Vallejo. But the gardens that he usually does are 100 times larger than this garden, palace gardens, whatever. So we needed an example that that my audience could relate to. And if my audience even has a garden, it's more or less the size, I guess, of my garden.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't downplay your garden, by the way. You have a nice layout there. So yeah, you have a lot to work with.
It's getting there now. and you were referring to the curriculum that we built. This I think ever since the first course we made, and it's, I think we have about 15 or 10 or 12 courses now. Mm-hmm. We always went for a curriculum. I personally never really liked life learning, because you end up with videos that are 2 hours long, and there's a lot of time in between where either there's nothing to really look at or listen to, because, you know, they're wiring a branch and it just takes forever. The teacher feels obliged to, you know, continue talking, because you can't be silent. And so I think the format of life learning is just not proper. It's like a lecture then. Mm-hmm. And so we always went for lots of filming, lots of B-roll, and then editing it down to usually about 10% of what we originally filmed, just to keep, you know, momentum going. And also I think it works better to make it more educational if it's not too stretched out. So we condense it, and then, you know, a 2 or 3 day filming ends up being a 4 hour online course.
Yeah. Going through the way that you have it set up on here too, is like being very long winded. Now, it's just like you're giving us the same thing, but you're giving us sample servings of it, which, you know, that's great. That does go a long way. I get that thing where it's like, we do watch live, we get that one moment for what feels like forever. You know, sometimes like you get like an hour and a half in and you're like, he said something that I wanted to jot down, but my brain I was glazed over so hard right there. Where you're trying to scan through it and find that moment. Whereas with your courses, I do like that you have all of your, even the videos have their own little section time blocks with titles, which is beautiful. So good job on doing that. I don't know if the previous courses, I haven't looked that far back.
We did all of them.
You did them all? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a question.
You mean each lecture is subsections as well? So yes. You have chapters within the lecture. Yeah, exactly.
It's within. You keep like zooming in closer and you're like, this exact moment where I was looking for. And one of my questions for you I had on the side for this was, so these courses do feel like they will become timeless in a way, where it's like you will have these up for as long as we could perceivable amount of time. I mean, you don't have any plans of taking these down. There would be no reason. So is there any case where you feel like you want to go back and make changes to these courses or updates or anything like that? Is that something you think about?
Sure. Well, we do make updates every now and then. So especially with the courses that are more about techniques, we revisit trees every now and then and show an update. On my next visit to the garden of Masahiko Kimura, we'll also film some updates of trees that we worked on with him. Most of the trees are sold off, but then usually we find them somewhere at a customer's garden, like, for example. Mm-hmm. We do that. But if with these lecture formats, I wouldn't change a lecture halfway. Sometimes, you know, going through the edit, there's always a section that didn't rework, so we edit it out perhaps, or we leave it in, but it's not ideal. So of course, if I had the chance, I would fly back and just update it a little bit. And but yeah, you got to work with the material shot at the place.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of, you know, get every shot you need. You probably have, like you said, you condense it down from 10%.
Yeah, so, well, it depends per online course.
There could be way more. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, before I get to I had a question about like amount of time and all that it takes. But let me kind of go through the rest of the notes I had on your, on this particular course as well, is some just like fine points so we can get through it, is that I liked that all the sections are broken up. You can mark them as completed. That's a nice touch. Now, I don't know if you guys go back, it gives you guys an additional data readout, how many people are completing things. Do you ever look at that?
Yeah, no, definitely. And also, even per lecture, we can see how long it's watched and how much percentage of those lectures are seen. And usually it's more than 100%. So what people do is they go back, watch it again. So then, you know, it adds up.
There you go.
So I think that because we add chapters within the lectures, people do go back and forth or continue with other lectures and then get back to that one specific chapter to rewatch that. And then, you know, so people are going back and forth a little bit. And sometimes some lectures are skipped or not watched as much, which makes sense, right?
Yeah. Is there like a script that could be popped out for this as well? Is that an option with this course?
Yeah, some courses have a course guide. Not this one, not the Suzuki Masterclass, but some other courses do. Because then we do script it out with sometimes some additional information and some visuals as well, which is very convenient if you want to go back into the course a few weeks later and you're not quite sure where it was again. So,
I mean, how do I complain about that? You know, I can't really pick that apart.
We didn't do it for the Suzuki course, sorry.
Yeah, that's one thing I did notice that wasn't on that. I was like, well, we were talking about key moments in the videos, but what if there was key moments in the text, in the script of the, and you were like, what if I wanted to bring this to, you know, and if you probably wouldn't mind people taking this and bringing their bonsai clubs and societies and kind of giving notes on stuff that they had gotten from your course as reference, you know? So that would be nice. But you, like you said, some other ones have it. This one doesn't. Yeah. But a lot of replay value, like you said, that's a good thing. That's a great thing to hear. But other than that, I mean, I can't critique too much on this other than, like I said, some of the audio, some of the lengths of videos. But everything was very digestible. The long shots was probably my favorite part of the whole thing, especially when you get to the end of the course with the just the conclusion section. Is like, it's just like extra gravy on top. You're just like, oh, by the way, let's do a more long pan shot, you know, of the gardens, you know. So you just feel like you're really there, and we all love that kind of stuff. So if you don't mind, do you have time for a couple of like behind the scenes questions with
this? Sure, man, bring it up.
Cool. So just to kind of get an idea how this works, because we talked a little bit earlier about how much information is needed to, like, everything's on, you know, terabytes of information to get this shot. But realistically, I think you said a little while ago, it was like 2 years between these shots. How long in its entirety does it take to set this entire course up, to give our listeners a scope?
I think it starts with getting the teachers to agree, and that takes a long time. Like, you need to be acquainted with them, and
so add that to the timeline.
If you add that, it's years. If you already have that, then so in our case, we know most of these masters, of course, because we visited their gardens, either me or my team. But you know, once you get them to agree or at least show interest, then you know you need to work out a curriculum. That is a partnership between them and us, because I'm not the one who will build a curriculum and ask them to you know, talk about these chapters. So it's them also proposing the topics they want to talk about and the way they want to do it. So there's a lot of preparations and going back and forth between us and the teachers. And even, you know, the cultural barrier between us in the EU or US and Japan is much bigger, still bigger than I always expect. Sometimes I really feel like, okay, we went through everything, everybody understands it, we were very careful to arrange everything, and then still you arrive on the scene, it's like, oh, you want to do it like dead, oh shit, that we need another lens to be able to film that or whatever. So there's always a bit of on the spot juggling, but the preparations take a while. It also depends on the teacher. If like back in the days when we two years ago when we filmed with Michael and Bjorn, that's very easy, and I know them of course much better than how I know Shinji Suzuki. But with Shinji Suzuki, there's a bit more preparations. And then arriving at the spot, then, you know, we know that we only have an X amount of time to film everything. So from there on, it's just hard work. And the nice thing about working with Japanese bonsai masters is that their stamina is incredible. I think Mr. Kimura takes the top spot. I remember once we filmed a long day, so starting very early in the morning till late afternoon. He took us out for dinner. And then after dinner, I was hoping to go home, you know, and have a rest and maybe check a bit of the footage to see if everything went well.
Yeah.
And then he was like, no, let's go back to the garden. We need to repot the tree. And then we took another 3.5 hours till midnight to repot a massive pine. That's for an upcoming course, by the way, so it's not yet available.
Cool.
But spoiler alert. They just keep going and going. It's different from what I'm used to. Yeah. 9 to 5 is...
9 to 5 is not...
they don't know 9 to 5.
So. Yeah. I've heard quite a few like Bjorn's talks, so like either on podcasts or videos that he's done and talking about culture in Japan. And it's... I love the story he tells about like how the train arrived late to it stopped one day and they had like national news. They were like, we're so sorry. I was like, holy crap. But yeah, I could see that. It is the real deal, especially like, I mean, this is his life every day, 7 days a week. They give himself like one holiday out of the entire year to do something else. So yeah, I could see they're hardcore, especially Mr. Kimura, I can imagine.
Still going strong. It's really incredible. This legends in bonsai that did everything. You know, you can never imagine of a living person doing bonsai, and then still at this age, he's outpacing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's hard to keep up with him, and that's really really incredible.
We were talking about the recording, like how long it takes. You said you have a limited amount of time, but then I can imagine the editing process. So give us kind of a run through real quick of how the editing process. How long does that usually take you guys?
We go through phases. Trying to do is get a first very raw version where I put things in order, have a bit of the B-roll selected with courses that with Japanese speak. So I speak a little bit Spanish. So with Luis Vallejo, I know what he's talking about. I'm not exactly, but quite well. But with Shinji Suzuki, I need subtitles at some point to be able to continue. So then it's the subtitling process. People are doing that. And then... getting that back into the video, and then I'll take one more turn. I'll take one more turn to put things in order, and then it's off to the video editing crew. Well, crew is a big word. The two guys who really do the editing and the color correction and those sort of things. Because I want to be the one in charge of the educational part, what goes where, splitting it up in sizable chapters. But then, to get it really perfected and have all the colors match and the different cameras and the drone and whatever, all those things need to feel and look the same. And then there's a final version that goes back to the teachers to watch as well, because I want them to also agree and make sure that we didn't have an error somewhere. We make some last final things and then we're done. It's a lot of work making this. It's totally different from making a YouTube video.
This is a video production, like I said, near cinematic feeling. So I can imagine, because it took you 2 years between the shots to get all the shots you wanted for this course. And then the editing, from what you're making sound like, this could be months, maybe even like a year or so before this was done. So give us an idea, like do you remember the date 2 years ago and then to the completion date? So what's the whole entirety of this particular course?
I think... about a year.
So about a year?
Not so bad. Well, with preparation going before, right? So from filming, this was filmed mostly about a year ago.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And so then I think a year before that, we were starting the planning, and that takes time too. Right? It's not a daily thing for us.
Would you be comfortable sharing some logistics real quick with us? You don't have to say any numbers, but the cost going into it, and then what you get on the other side.
I prefer not to.
Not to, yeah.
Nah.
I was just seeing if there was a percentage.
It's nothing like super much or ridiculously low, but it's just, I don't want to talk
about it. But it's good enough. That's what I'm assuming, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was just seeing, because some people that get into these types of things, they people listen to little things to not only learn about bonsai, but we do talk about bonsai as a career and a profession. And you have a very unique take on bonsai as a profession.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, but yeah, we don't have to go there. It's totally fine.
All right. Right.
But yeah, because there are a lot of considerations. People have to think about how much does film equipment cost? Like what's the price of the cameras, the computers and the software that you need to even edit this? I mean, you get into a basic situation with that, it can start piling up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the hardware is not the part where I spend the money. It's mostly the hours in production.
Yeah.
So filming and mostly after production.
It's more of your time that you would say equates to the biggest cost.
The editing of the lectures in the end, and then marketing it and doing the sales, the launch. Of course, all that stuff is work,
mm-hmm.
but it helps that it's nice work.
Yeah.
So for me personally, these are childhood dreams coming true to make these things with the top guys who I always looked up to and still do, but to be able to have them, to work together with them, that's something that's really, really special to me. And usually when I ask or like do a first proposal, like, hey, would you be interested to work with us? I realize very strongly that they are always very careful, especially the Japanese masters, because they know me and they know Bonsai Empire a little bit less than, you know, guys like Bjorn or Michael do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they need to be, they need to feel safe with us filming them and selling it online. I mean, this is a part of their either legacy or of their
reputation overall.
Yeah, their reputation and the techniques that they're familiar with. Not everyone wants to share that stuff as well.
Yeah.
So
it takes a lot of trust because, you said, if something was said and you know, there's shop talk in behind the scenes, people might just be talking. And there's a lot of trust there. It's like, don't let them know about this and that, but make sure it's strictly business. But also keep it, like you said, it's got to be that next level of, like, you know, you said dream job. I mean, this is, you get to see the best of the best, but everyone has their private lives. Like we're talking here, and it's, you know, that's a lot of stuff that you have to go through and fine tooth pick all that. That's a lot of work, I can imagine. Yeah. So, so I don't have a lot really left over to kind of go through. I mean, as we talk,
I feel like we did a very long run through of the course. I hope it's not too boring for those.
No, man. Like
listening.
Remember the last time we had you on the show and you were like, oh, we don't have to talk about me. And I'm like, look, man, people want to know you. The podcast thing is like, some people listen to other podcasts and they're like, why don't you go like 3 or 4 hours? And I'm like, are you insane? But some people have morning commutes. Some people have lunch breaks, exactly. Or they'll work and they'll listen to podcasts, you know? Never worry about length or anything. It's, you know, it's all for, you know, being part of the conversation. I mean, we're all here and that's one of the things that's really cool about podcasting that I love a lot too, is that if you're looking for something and you just want to be part of a conversation, maybe they don't have other people to talk to about these kind of things. Just hearing someone talk about, you know, something that brings us all together here, which is our bonsai, you know. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about bonsai. Like you said, this is not a job. This is your dream job. Yeah. Every day at work is a leisure. It's fun, you know. It just reminds me of a story real quick. As I was standing in line waiting for a burger at a local brewery, I was getting a beer and a burger, and I looked tired. I had worked all day, and I've got a four month year old baby, so I don't sleep a whole lot right now. And this guy walks up to me in line. He's like, oh, long day, huh? You really need that beer? And I was like, well, yeah, I could use it. It's fine. He's like, oh, must have been a bad day at work, brother. And I'm like, nope, I don't work at all. And he was taken aback by that. He's like, okay. And it's like walked off. He couldn't deal with that, you know?
Yeah, fuck
so
you.
It's hard to explain that to people. But I can definitely sense it from the way you talk about this video process and everything here.
Not many people get to, you know, make a job out of something they love that much. And it can be a problem as well. Like, there's a lot of industries, and I think the bonsai industry included, is the downside of that is that a lot of passionate people are in it, and sometimes it's hard to make a living, a solid living. Mm-hmm. So there might be a bit of there might be more competition in these passionate job sectors than there are in others. But I don't really get that feeling with Bonsai anyway. Like it's more of a community than a competitive sector, perhaps. I don't know. My girlfriend is an architect. That's one business where a lot of very passionate people are also in. And yeah, it's sometimes it's really hard to make a good living in those places. But anyway,
mm-hmm. No, I get it. This is an art, and what. And I'm gonna go ahead and just like some closing remarks on our conversation.
Yeah, the architect thing was not the most interesting.
No, closing remarks though.
Yeah,
this is art. What you did was art. So thank you so much for, you know, the tireless hours putting this stuff together. You know, bringing all these awesome videos and lectures to the Bonsai world and to the community. So I have to praise you on that again, of course, because I mean, the stuff is great. You know, undeniably. I mean. I don't know, you know, and I might just be biased because like one of the things that I look at when Bonsai Empire, I told you back in the day, this was where a lot of people get started. And now you have gone above and beyond presenting these lectures and classes. So thank you again for doing all that. That's amazing. You've done all that work.
Thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it.
No. And you deserve that. So keep doing what you're doing. I know you said, you had some stuff coming up. I was going to ask for some spoilers, but you did spoil a future Kimura video.
Yeah, myself already.
Yeah. Do you have any other spoilers or anything coming up that you would like to tell the community real quick?
No. I think so there is an upcoming thing with Kimura. It will take a while, but this is the last will do. And I think what makes that one very special is that Mr. Kimura actually himself said like this is part of my legacy. I want this to be the last one, and I'll give you my everything. So he's preparing trees for about 2 years now, just
that's intense. It's that's really so intense.
It's a bit stressful again, like even though we did filming with him before, but I'm really excited about that as well. But anyway, this Suzuki was a totally different character, and Kimura is as well, but it's there, they're both top of their game. It's slightly different games, perhaps. Both Bonsai, but one is in a very delicate and design and Japanese aesthetic, and Kimura is on a different world if you talk techniques and things mm-hmm. that he invented himself, so, and what he can do.
But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And maybe we'll do this again when the next course comes up. We can talk through.
I'd love to. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, for sure. But thank you so much, Oscar, for coming in and just talking about the course, and we're going through and trying my best to find things to pick apart with your course, but it's so hard. I mean, the quality of Bonsai Empire,
I feel like it's too bad that I don't have a podcast, because I feel like I want to ask you questions as well, but I'm not sure if this is the right time to ask you all these things, but
maybe later on. And I mean, I thought you had done a podcast show a little while back.
Or I did a one-off once with Bjorn, which was great fun, but I don't know. I didn't have the time to pursue it.
I'm a very studious person when it comes to that. Like, nothing passes my radar. Like, yeah. I keep up with a lot of other people and a lot of other processes of like podcasts and videos and stuff like this. So I was like, I know there was something out there, but it's not a bad idea. You know, it's a lot of fun. So, but yeah, like I said, Oscar, thank you so much for hanging out. And you have a great one, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just wanted to tell you guys about Save Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also, the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry.
Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
Thank you guys so much for listening to that review. I had a lot of fun talking to Oscar. Oscar is always a great guest to have on the show. He's a very nice guy, and he's expressed interest in coming back later on too. So that's really great news. And so, yeah, I hope to do more reviews like this, and it looks like that will be in the future as well. But yeah, since you guys have made it this far, I want to thank you guys again for listening to Little Things for Bonsai People. We really, really appreciate y'all taking some time out of y'all's day to learn some bonsai with us. And I wanted to go ahead and shout out our patron list that I always say at the end of each episode. So I'm going to start off our list with our bonsai best buds in no particular order. That's just the way they come off of the patron page. It's going to be Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Radtron Studio, Kyle Ford, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominque, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Myrick Bonsai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Baccaccini, Gilbert Jorez, Sean Seaman, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crehan, Victrina Ridgeway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, Joss Potts, Bonsai Marine, AC Castle, Luis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Atkins, David N., Chase Pertweet, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Greenwich Gardens, it goes straight into Bonsai, Backyard Bonsai Australia, which I've had a lot of issues saying that one in the past as well, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gardano, Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Auth, it just happens that Ricky Ruins and Vicky Auth are both in San Antonio. That's why I get them mixed up. Montana, Bridgman, Mark Malte, Draco, like that one, Micah Rouse, Joseph Gardano. It's another Gardano to throw me off. And Kathy Barmazon. And of course, we have our specimen best buds, Anra Yuen in Australia, Bonsai Garden. Thank you, Jay. And also thank you, Bill, with Bill's Bayou for being the anchor bonsai specimen bud down here. And of course, our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, John. And so if you guys want to check out any more content, of course, for Underhill, I know I went into it a good bit just a moment ago, but go over to underhillbonsai.com. I don't want to go too much more into it because I just flooded you guys with a lot of information about Underhill and my projects there. So you just go over there and check that out on social media as well as Facebook and Instagram. And then, of course, for Carmen Leskovienski, you can go over to Becoming Bonsai on Instagram and Facebook and check out what she's got going on. And also support the purplepotsociety.org for supporting women in bonsai. I myself am also a member of that, so you don't have to be a female to support. And then of course we've got Mike Lane. Mike, we love you, buddy. We'll see you soon when we can get you, but we're going to go ahead and promote you. KitsuneBonsai.com. You can go over to his website and see what offerings he has. He's a South Florida bonsai artist specializing in tropicals and shohin. And he's been doing a lot of traveling recently, so you can book him there if you guys would like to. He's been booking outside of the country. So he went to Puerto Rico recently and he went to India before that. So y'all help Mike out and get him around the world. We can get some more bonsai people from America out there. And then of course we got a revived show host in Nate Murray. We're gonna have Nate on a lot more often as he's going to help us kind of fill in some more episodes as we need show hosts, because coordinating and scheduling is a little difficult. So thank you, Nate, so much for helping us out and stepping up to do that. You can go check out Nate Murray's content on Instagram and Facebook, The Boot Bonsai. Nate Murray is a Southeast Louisiana bald cypress and other natives collectors. So he's right up our alley, especially for the content that we were making before. And he's got trees available for purchase. Nate said he's been shipping bald cypresses all around the United States, and he has really high quality collected bald cypresses with good fluting and with good knees and other features that are highly desirable in that species. But yeah, like I said, again, if you guys listen this far, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up with you guys on the next week's episode.